Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. As part of WITF's Election 2020 coverage, two candidates running for different offices appear on today's Smart Talk to discuss their positions on the issues. Democrat Eugene DePasquale is running for the U.S. House of Representatives in the 10th Congressional District. The 10th District encompasses all of Dauphin County and portions of York and Cumberland counties. DePasquale is Pennsylvania's current Auditor General and a former state representative. He is running against Republican incumbent Congressman Scott Perry. And I want to remind our audience that these conversations with candidates are intended to inform voters where the candidates stand on the issues. Eugene DePasquale, welcome to the program. All right, let's hope that we get the Auditor General on the phone here very soon. Coming up a little bit later in the program, we also have the Green Party candidate for Pennsylvania State Treasurer, Timothy Runkle, will be appearing on the program as well. As part of what we're doing here on Smart Talk, we are offering these opportunities to not just Democrats and Republicans, but also the what many people refer to as the third-party candidates, the Green Party, and also Libertarian Party candidates that we have on the Pennsylvania ballot as well. So that's hopefully we will have the Eugene DePasquale coming up in just a moment. In the meantime, let me tell you some of the other things that we have coming up on the program. Coming up a little bit later, by the way, before I do that, let me just also go back to what we were saying about the political candidates appearing on the program. There were a total of 26 candidates that we've invited to appear on Smart Talk. That includes what we're looking for is to appear on the program are those in the WITF listening area that are in congressional races running for the U.S. House of Representatives. There are none, you know, our U.S. senators are not up for re-election this year, running for the U.S. House of Representatives, and also the statewide offices, and we made invitations to 26 different candidates, and last I heard, about half of them had agreed to appear on the air. And I understand, Eugene DePasquale, you're on with us now.
Hey, Scott, how you doing? Good morning.
I'm doing okay. Hey, you know, during the pandemic, there are a lot of things that go on, including losing phone calls. So thanks for being with us today. So tell me right off the bat, why did you decide to run for the U.S. House of Representatives?
Look, people in your listening area have heard about my audits over the last, you know, almost 8 years now, where I've been a tough and fair watchdog on a Republican governor and a tough and fair watchdog on a Democratic governor. And I thought with all the issues that are going on in Washington, D.C., we could use someone who has some balance, willingness to call it like you see it, and try to shake things up to make the district work for us. And when you talk about trying to improve health care, talking about trying to lower the cost of prescription drugs, tackling climate change like the crisis it is, and certainly when I announced we weren't in a pandemic, but I think now more than ever, we could use some science and health-based leadership in this region to try to move our country forward.
You may have just touched on it, but what are your priorities if elected?
Well, I want to say this. Before the pandemic, and I think these priorities still apply, certainly the cost of prescription drugs, building upon the Affordable Care Act and tackling climate change like the moral crisis it is. Clearly, during this pandemic and, you know, obviously, if I win, taking office in January, still in this situation, the number one priority has got to be getting this economy back up and moving for everybody and getting small businesses the help they need so we can get people back to work safely.
So what role does Congress have in getting the virus, I'm going to say, under control, right, if Congress has any role, and then that recovery that you're talking about?
Well, there's two parts. One is working in a science and health data-related way on getting a vaccine that is safe, that has the trust of the American people. I think that is critical to getting us back to whatever version of normal we're going to call the future. That's number one. So that's on, and I don't want, you know, look, I'm obviously not a medical doctor. I'm not here to tell you what getting the virus under control is, but clearly a vaccine is critical. We've got to have leaders. Hopefully people consider myself one of those that are going to actually use facts, science, and health data on making sure that we have a vaccine that has the confidence of the American people. So that's number one. Number two, only the federal government, similar to the New Deal, has the ability to get direct funding to small businesses and individuals so they can survive until we can get that vaccine out. Look, certainly, we're having the economy slowly beginning to reopen. But we want to do that in a safe way. And for the businesses that are still hurting because of the pandemic through no fault of their own, we've got to get them additional help until we can get this thing back up and fully running.
So right now, the Congress is not able to agree on a third package, recovery package. Tell me what you think that recovery package should look like.
Well, yeah, look, it is incredibly frustrating. And, you know, look, this is a sort of a shows you how broken D.C. is, that in the midst of this pandemic, they still can't find a reasonable compromise to get people the help they need. And people say, who do you blame more? Look, I'm sure on the actual issues, I side more with the Democrats and the Republicans. But the reality is there needs to be a compromise here because average everyday folks are hurting. And that's the type of leadership I'm going to prove down in D.C. Number one, we've got to get direct aid to the states so that we can have our first responders, whether it be healthcare professionals, fire and police, the funding they need. Without that funding to the states, we're going to have massive cuts to public safety and to healthcare professionals. That's unacceptable. Number two, we got to get cash directly in the hands of small businesses that are most impacted by this pandemic. Not the Los Angeles Lakers, not Shake Shack, which would happen in the first round of this, which is clearly unacceptable. And three, we have to pass an oversight board to make sure that funding is going where it should go. Look, I've been having business walking tours throughout the region, whether it be Harrisburg, Carlisle, York, and we're certainly going to have some others, had a small business roundtable on Sunday. Many of these small businesses are doing the best they can, but they're also valuable members of the community. They want to help keep their workers safe, and they want to keep their customers safe. That means they're limiting exposure to various customers. We have to, in a sense, reward that because they're doing their part but trying to stop the spread of the virus. We have to make sure that they're able to survive until we can get this vaccine out into the market.
A couple of things about the response to the pandemic. Just a quick question here. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden supports mandatory mask wearing nationwide if he is elected. You support that?
I think that I support mandatory masks. I do think that the decision should be at the local level, though. I do think that that should be a state and local decision. I think county health departments should be the one making it. I'm not sure how the federal government enforces that, but I do think everyone should wear a mask. So I want to be clear. I think county and state health departments are the appropriate ones to require that.
I also saw on your website that you support providing PPE equipment to as many first responders, teachers, educators as possible. But you said American made. Now, that sounds great, but yeah, at a time when those people need that equipment, should we turn it away if it's not American made?
No. Look, here's what the pandemic has opened our eyes to a lot of, every day you pull up the carpet or the rock and you find some other problem. So I'm not saying turn it away right now. Clearly, the number one priority is getting them the equipment they need. But it has opened our eyes to we're not making enough of this equipment in the United States. So we have to begin to immediately, whether that's adjusting the tax code, whether that's helping manufacturing companies retool their manufacturing operation. But it is a health and national security issue that we don't make enough of this equipment in the United States. So in the short term, absolutely not. We've got to get this equipment in. But we cannot leave ourselves vulnerable to other nations when it comes to critical national security equipment in the future.
I'm jumping around on you because I want to get to as many issues as possible. But the one thing I do want to address is your opponent, Scott Perry, is airing a television commercial that says you support socialized medicine, meaning the government pays for it, the Green New Deal on the environment, and defunding the police. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to that?
First of all, it's important to say the WGAL, which, you know, we're actually going to be, you know, putting out a release on this very soon, literally went through and looked at every claim and rated each one of them as false, false, and false. That is a direct lie from Congressman Perry, one of the most shameful lies I've ever seen in politics. Clearly a lie. Number one, I oppose defunding the police. Number two, I have my own plan for dealing with climate change that includes tackling climate change like the moral crisis it is. When I was a state legislator, and I think this is the approach we should take, which is having more clean energy jobs, using solar, wind, low-impact hydro, making those parts here in the United States, getting more of that energy into the grid, more infrastructure for electric cars, and helping make our grid more energy efficient as a way to tackle climate change, and being a leader, getting back engaged with the world so that we can get other nations back on track to tackle climate change. Number three, he literally claims in there something that is an absolute lie. And the amazing part about it is when they defended it, they pointed to an interview I did where I directly rebutted their claim. Number one, I've said clearly, people, if they like their private insurance, should be able to keep it. Number two, I believe we should have Medicare as an option for people to buy into. Number three, for those who can't afford either option, we automatically enroll them in the Medicaid. That's my health insurance plan. And Congressman Perry is lying, and he knows it.
How much of this race is about your proposals versus the performance of Scott Perry?
That's a good question. That's really going to be up to the voters. We're making our case. You know, we've been running ads for 6 weeks now, talking about getting people to know me. You know, talking about part of my life story. Look, my dad was wounded in Vietnam. Got addicted. You know, was literally prescribed synthetic heroin by the VA. Got addicted to painkillers. Ended up incarcerated. I had a brother with muscular dystrophy. We were never able to have health insurance for him. When he passed away as a sophomore at the University of Pittsburgh, and I was a first-year night law student, my dad was still incarcerated, had to come to the funeral in shackles. I wanted to let people know that story. Most people didn't know it. Actually, my youngest child didn't even know the full story about it, because I want people to know the type of experience I'm going to take with myself to Washington, D.C. when I'm fighting for everybody. And currently our proposals are, I'm going to fight for lower prescription drug prices by allowing the federal government to negotiate for lower prices. We're going to tackle climate change as opposed to Congressman Perry that literally blames God for all this and doesn't want to do anything about it. And he literally voted against lowering the cost of prescription drugs and is trying to overturn the Affordable Care Act, which will leave vulnerable tens of thousands of people here in South Central Pennsylvania that have a pre-existing condition. I wanted people to know that these fights are personal for me, and I'm going to do everything I can to fight for every single person, as opposed to Congressman Perry, who's literally fighting for far right-wing Freedom Caucus ideology.
You know, one thing I do want to say, though, is that telling your story and as forthcoming as you have been about it, because there aren't a lot of people who would admit that they had a parent who was incarcerated and had a substance abuse problem. But Congressman Perry also talks about growing up in a single parent household and growing up poor and maybe even being homeless at that time. So, I mean, is that something voters should take into account?
Look, first of all, he and I both had tough growing up. The big difference is I want to use that experience and my challenges to try to help people moving forward. He's literally trying to pull the ladder up from people by trying to take away their health insurance. But having said that, look, he had his challenges growing up. I commend him for where he's gotten in life. And I've had similar challenges, but I wanted people to know, part of my life story.
We're going to talk more about issues in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
WITF's election coverage is supported by the law firm of Saul Ewing, Arnstein & Lear.
Smart Talk is supported by Capital Blue Cross, providing health care coverage accepted by doctors and specialists in all 50 states. More information is available at capbluecross.com. Smart Talk is also supported by UPMC, offering tomosynthesis, 3D mammograms designed to be clearer, more precise, and accurate for detecting breast cancer. More information is available at upmcpinnacle.com/tomo.
Welcome back to Smart Talk. We are continuing our conversations with candidates on this November's election ballot. You know, I probably shouldn't say this November's election ballot because so many people are voting now and voting by mail. But Democrat Eugene D. Pasquale is running for the U.S. House of Representatives in the 10th Congressional District. The 10th District encompasses all of Dauphin County and portions of York County. Want to get back to...
And Cumberland, portions of Cumberland too, Scott.
Did I say Cumberland?
No, you didn't say it. We came out to the people of the of the Camp Hillary Mechanicsburg.
Oh, I know, I know.
Running over to Carlisle. We can't wait to see them on. Come on.
Well, that's an oversight on my part because, yes, you have Carlisle, you have York, you have Harrisburg as cities and boroughs in the district. I meant to say that. I'm not even reading my own script. Dauphin County and portions of York and Cumberland counties for the 10th Congressional District. I want to get back to you talked about the issues that were brought up in the TV commercial, but you said that you oppose or don't support the Green New Deal, but what you describe with your environmental plan sounds very close to it.
Well, the biggest, I've said this from the beginning, my biggest criticism of that was that they didn't include discussions with organized labor and the building trades and people that manufacture the clean energy here in the United States. And my plan directly, and I met with all the building trades, whether they're, you know, supporting me or not politically, to say I want them to be the groups that are building these devices, this clean energy here in the United States. So that is the biggest difference, is that I want to use my energy plan to actually not only clean the environment, tackle climate change, but create blue-collar clean energy jobs here in the United States.
How long will that take? I mean, when we're talking about renewable energy such as solar and wind power, right now it is a very small percentage of the energy grid. How do you get it moving more quickly? I know on your website you say as soon as science will allow. What does that look like?
Well, that's exactly what that means. But here's the reality of this. You know, like, I'm not comparing the two, but I'm just giving you an example. We did not have anywhere close to the military we needed at the beginning of World War II, but we made it a national priority, and rapidly we ended up having a military that we needed and had access to win World War II. I'm not comparing the exact situation. I want to be clear about that. But when it becomes a national priority, we have the ability to move heaven and earth to get this stuff going.
Where's the money come from for that?
Well, look, I mean, we have two choices here. Either find the money or we continue to see our environment perish. We have to find it.
Well, then let me turn to infrastructure. You have made a point. One of the priorities I see on your website is rebuilding the infrastructure here in Pennsylvania and across the country. Have to say that, you know, Republicans and Democrats, President Trump, when he was running, talked about this as a priority. Everyone agrees it needs to be done, but nothing seems to happen on it. And one of the big problems, of course, is just like I asked with the last question, how do you pay for it?
So here's the idea of I have floated on this. And when I say this, people go, oh, that's interesting. I think we can do, because we have so many infrastructure needs right now. And because of the economy, the actual prices of whether it be asphalt and all these other items that you need to build this infrastructure are very low. I've recommended we do infrastructure bonds, that we do and we start a massive infrastructure plan right now and use existing resources, whether it be the gas tax or other fees that exist all throughout the United States, to pay off those bonds over a 30-year period. That way we can get the critical investment we need right now, also getting people back to work. And at the same time, there is a plan to pay that off for 30 years.
What is that plan? Because, I mean, what you're talking about is borrowing money.
Borrowing money and using it. It's similar to, you know, when you take out a mortgage on your house. You know, you're putting that money up front, then you're paying it off over a period of 15 or 30 years. Because the investment is critical right now.
Investment in what? What infrastructure do you think should take priority?
Yeah, there's three areas that I think are critical when it comes to infrastructure, and obviously there's going to be others that come down. I'm a fix it first when it comes to our roads and bridges, so fixing our roads and bridges. Number two, updating our sewer water systems. I think, you know, one of the reasons why the Susquehanna River is one of the most polluted rivers in the United States, because there's so much sewer and overflow that goes into there from these severe storms. We've got to upgrade our sewer and water systems there. Number three, I think we've got to improve our grid across the United States so it becomes more efficient and we can pump more clean energy into that as well. Those are my three priorities. You also want to include into that electric stations as we hopefully get more electric cars into circulation and more people can hopefully be able to afford those so they can have more electric charging stations as well.
from what I understand, you have, I don't know whether you totally support it, but I'll ask the question, but you do support President Trump calling out China when it comes to trade and manipulation of the currency.
Yeah.
Did you support his tariffs on Chinese products?
No, I'm not a fan of tariffs. I look at that as a backdoor tax increase on the American people, and I think it's hurting our farmers, both here in South Central Pennsylvania and across Pennsylvania and across the United States. So I don't like tariffs. Having said that, I don't always like his language, certainly, and his approach bothers me in so many areas, but I do think he is correct on taking China on with trade. They've been stealing our intellectual property, and I do believe we should be tough in the negotiations with them in presence of both parties that have caved to them for far too long.
You're critical of NAFTA, again, on your website, and it's been renegotiated by the Trump administration. Do you support the renegotiation?
The renegotiation, I thought, got us a lot more closer to where I thought we should be, absolutely.
In what way?
I think it worked out more for United States jobs. I think the critical part of that was that it didn't just allow Mexico. Again, I think we have to have trade with them, but it didn't allow Mexico to just underbid our prices without tough environmental standards. The environmental and labor standards in that renegotiation were improved. And again, I was much more comfortable with where those renegotiations took us.
You also support increasing the minimum wage to what?
I believe it should go up to 15. I believe we've got to phase it in over a period of years. And then I do want to index it to inflation so that we can, you know, never go back to the idea or the reality where you have a minimum wage that barely is even where the poverty level is.
When you say number of years, any idea how many years?
I'd like to phase it in a period, take a five-year period and do a piece of it every 5 years. So allowing small businesses and others, so starting in January, every year, getting it up a certain percentage and getting it by in 5 years up to $15.
You realize that there are some people here in Pennsylvania and across the country, and of course this argument has been made about minimum wage since it started, that increasing the minimum wage to whether it's $12, $15 is a job killer at a time when so many people have lost their jobs.
It's just not reality. Places, first of all, we're the only state in the entire Northeast that still has a minimum wage that's the same as the federal. Every other state in the Northeast has raised their minimum wage, and they haven't seen one negative impact. In fact, they've only seen positive because you're actually putting money back into people's pockets for working hard and playing by the rules, which only further enhances the entire economy. The biggest challenge we have right now in our economy beyond the pandemic is that working families and middle-class families haven't seen a wage increase. When you raise the minimum wage, you're not only raising wages for people that are on the minimum wage, but you're raising it for people that are just above it as well. In a sense, it gives another boost to the economy because you're giving working families more spending money. To me, that's a much better approach. And by the way, Congressman Perry opposes raising minimum wage. In fact, he's never even confirmed whether he thinks there should even be a minimum wage. I think he's tried to duck that one because I believe he actually doesn't think there should be a minimum wage, but he's tried to duck that one for his entire tenure in Congress, which, again, if he doesn't believe there should even be a minimum wage, shows how out of touch he is. The fact that he doesn't even want an increase shows how out of touch he is.
Earlier, you talked about Congressman Perry saying you wanted to defund the police, and you said that's not true, but you do have plans for reforming law enforcement and also some of the racial inequities. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, look, I do believe we need to make our police better. That includes better training. That includes better screening for mental health for people that, quite frankly, shouldn't be police officers in some instances. I do believe we need to tear down the barriers between so many communities across the United States and the police so that we have better cooperation so we can make our communities safer. And we certainly need to have situations when you have bad police officers. You know, the person that murdered George Floyd, at least I believe it was murder, had so many charges already leveled against that individual. Those type of police officers should be able to be removed from the force.
You actually have a plan for reform. Can you talk about some of the highlights?
Yeah, it's getting rid of qualified immunity, banning chokeholds, improving training. Those are the key priorities of that. And also better mental health screenings for people before they become police officers. also is also critical. That again, we have to have the police engage more with the community. You know, when I was, you know, growing up, so many police officers actually lived in the communities that they police. So many police officers now do not, and I get that, that has been bargained away between mayors and the FOP. I think we got to have a, we got to make more community policing too, so that we can actually get police officers to be members of the community again. I think that's also critical. And it's also important to note, Congressman Perry voted against the reform that was bipartisan at the federal level, which includes banning chokeholds. So he couldn't even come to grips with banning chokeholds, even though the entire Pennsylvania Republican Senate voted for banning chokeholds.
By the way, did the two of you have any debates scheduled?
We have two scheduled, October 8th, and, which is, I think, live television, WHTM ABC 27, and I believe it's October 19th, WGAL Channel 8.
You know, Mr. Auditor General, many people are tired of politics as usual. As Auditor General, your office is conducting an audit of Governor Wolf's program that determined which businesses could stay open during the pandemic and which got approval to operate. Now, the results haven't been released yet. I understand you're looking for October to do that. But the governor attended a fundraiser for you, has contributed to your campaign. For some, that provides the perception that you're not performing a viable audit that may be critical of a political supporter, that you're giving him a free pass. How do you respond to that?
Well, I've been a tough and fair watchdog on the governor, and the same people that are saying that were the same ones that loved the job I was doing as Auditor General right up until I announced to Congress. So, you know, they're playing politics with this. We're having a tough audit on that, and we're going to have our information released October 6th. And believe me, it will show exactly how we need to improve that business waiver process and other items when it comes to dealing with our businesses if we ever, God forbid, have to do this shutdown again.
Do you understand, though, why that would provide a bad perception for some people? Someone that you're auditing, you're not auditing the governor personally, but something that you're auditing is contributing to your campaign.
Look, he's a private citizen. He wanted to support my campaign because he believes Scott Perry is out of touch. And again, when it comes to my day job as Auditor General, I'm going to be tough and fair.
We're almost out of time. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. I always like to allow the candidate an opportunity to leave a message for voters. What would your message be for voters?
People have seen my work as Auditor General over the last 8 years. They've seen me crack down on over 3,200 untested rape kits, reducing that backlog by 97%. They found me find 58,000 unanswered phone calls at the child abuse hotline, working hard across the state to fix that system, better protect children, having tough and fair audits of our school districts, having tough and fair audits of every single state agency, cracking down on sexual harassment, and even reforming my own department so that we are much more efficient, getting rid of 240 cars in the department when I took over, so that we are a lean and mean operation as well, and finding over $1 billion wasted by Harrisburg, and being tough and fair on a Republican governor and tough and fair on a Democratic governor. And I believe that's the type of leadership we need in Washington, D.C. And if people elect me, that's exactly what they're going to get from me every single day.
Democrat Eugene D. Pasquale running for the U.S. House of Representatives, the 10th District. The 10th District encompasses all of Dauphin County and portions of York and Cumberland counties. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Always a pleasure, Scott. Thanks so much, and have a great rest of the day.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
WITF's election coverage is supported by the law firm of Saul Ewing, Ernstein, and Lear.
Timothy Runkle is the Green Party candidate for Pennsylvania State Treasurer. The Pennsylvania Office of the State Treasurer serves as the custodian of more than $100 billion in Commonwealth funds and is responsible for the receipt and deposit of state monies and investment management and oversight of all withdrawals and deposits from state agencies. Also running for treasurer are incumbent Democratic Treasurer Joe Torsella, Republican Stacey Garrity, and Libertarian Joe Soloski. Tim Runkle, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show today.
So tell us about yourself. There are some out there who may not be familiar with Tim Runkle. Give us a little bit of background.
Yeah, that's understandable. It's probably a new name you haven't heard before. I'm a Lebanon-Lancaster area resident. That's where I've grown up. And I have a BS in geology from Millersville University. So the past couple of years, I've been doing environmental consulting. And my main profession is a project manager for site investigations, remediation projects. I work for both public and government clients all throughout Pennsylvania and actually on the whole East Coast of the U.S. And a little bit of background for myself. I'm a Green Party candidate for state treasurer. Green Party candidates typically run here in Pennsylvania to push a platform forward that folks may not be familiar with. So I'd love to speak upon that today and introduce your listeners to us.
Okay, we can do that. But what in your background or what you do now prepares you to be the treasurer of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, treasurer is a huge job. You got your hands on a lot of money of the Commonwealth. My previous experience through project management doesn't necessarily compare to the magnitude, but a lot of that is applicable. The treasurer's role is largely just project management. They do administrative work. They serve on a number of boards, and they network with the rest of the Commonwealth government and public and private agencies. So my work as project manager actually fits right in with that, because you just need to be a forward-thinking person that can hold things to a schedule, look out for those big roadblocks and the bumps in the road, and be able to pull people in to manage that case properly.
Why did you decide to run for treasurer?
Well, I'm running for treasurer because I want to make sure people hear some different points of view. I want to make sure people understand that it doesn't take $1 million to run for office. And I want to encourage people to get out there and run for a public office on their own and get involved. Our government works better when we function through the individuals that make our community great. So I'd like to see a lot more people getting involved in the political process.
Well, getting involved in political process is one thing, but becoming the treasurer is another. I didn't hear you say why you would want to be treasurer as opposed to just running for political office.
Right, right. So I got my feet wet a little bit in treasury. I do function as the Green Party of PA state treasurer within the political party, and I've been doing that function for 3 years now. So it's right up my avenue to understand finances and be able to manage them.
Are there changes that you would like to make? Or maybe the question I should ask is, if you were elected, what would your priorities be as treasurer?
Yeah, certainly. I'd love to speak to that. My priorities as treasurer are really going to be putting a spotlight on how the money is being spent and acquired here in the Commonwealth. There's been good work done through the transparency portal that's available to us. You know, Pennsylvania wasn't able to actually see what was going on with the state expenditures prior to the transparency portal. It was very difficult to get that information. But I think we need to take the next step. Now we need to explain that better to folks. What does it actually mean? What does our spending mean? When the Commonwealth invests its asset into a bank, what's the bank's practices? Are they an ethical bank? We should be talking about that, how we can sustainably and ethically spend our money or invest our money, and the far reaches of that as it gets out there into in the community. Who are we giving the benefits to?
Mm-hmm. Well, talk a little bit more about that. I mean, what do you see? First of all, when you talk about the background of the banks that are involved, the ethical practices of the bank, be more specific, if you would, about what you think Pennsylvanians should know.
Right. That you may have heard, or folks may have heard, that surrounding the Keystone XL pipeline, there was an effort put forward to divest, they called it divest, from banks that supported that pipeline. That's one example. where if the Commonwealth had an ethical view on where they were placing their money, they could actually impact public policy or private expenditures by where they put their money into banks. One thing that I'd like to see is that we start to think about that more and do it in a manner that can prepare the Commonwealth for things like a Green New Deal. The Green New Deal is a policy plank that's been put forward by the Green Party for many years and is becoming mainstream, and it directly targets a lot of spending and a lot of investment in things that are sustainable energy, restorative practices that are going to help us survive a climate emergency that we're on the brink of.
Talk about the Green New Deal, if you would, and this kind of gets into what you had mentioned earlier about some of the policies, some of the things that the Green Party is looking for. Overall, okay, let's start with that, the Green Party. What are some of the things that the Green Party stands for?
Sure. The Green Party, they're a worldwide party. That's what folks don't necessarily understand about us. There's Green Parties all over the world, and they actually have a lot of influence in countries other than the U.S. Here in the U.S., we basically struggle for major policy planks because we're excluded from a lot of things like primaries. So you don't hear us much, but our policies are built on sustainable environment. They're built on social justice, grassroots democracy. And those are principles that we value and that come through in all the policy decisions that we put forward for folks to consider.
So where does the job of treasurer come in with all that? How does it fit in with the beliefs, the policies of the positions of the Green Party?
Yeah, I actually think it's a difficult fit for anyone to make it partisan. That's because it is largely just an administrative position. So that's where I think that when you talk about how the state spends money, if we think about it a little bit more in an ethical practice, and the state treasurer can use their position as a podium, we can say, or the state treasurer couldn't say, when there's grants that are given to the petroleum industry here in Pennsylvania. He can caveat that and use his platform as, listen, this is not a sustainable industry. It isn't clean or healthy for the environment. These grants are actually promoting them through a subsidy, and it's going to reduce the health of our communities. So think about using the state treasurer position in a different way. I'm going to go ahead and make sure the finances are safe, and I'm going to spend as the General Assembly requires me to. But I can speak on what that means in a different manner than just writing the checks.
You gave an example of the petroleum industry. Pennsylvania, as you well know, is one of the largest producers of natural gas in the country and actually in the world. So as treasurer, I mean, that industry is bringing in a lot of tax money. There are some who have ideas about how it could bring in more, but even right now it is bringing in a lot of tax money. So with the Green Party's philosophy on the environment, how does that jibe with what you're talking about?
I guess reframe that question for me. Is it that, how are we going to, I can take that. I mean, the big concern may be is that if we, for instance, get rid of fracking in Pennsylvania, that we'll actually lose out on revenue. And this is what I see a lot in politics. There's a big argument here in Pennsylvania. Oh, we should be taxing them more because we're basically giving it away for free. There are impact fees that does bring in a lot of revenue. And what are we going to do without that revenue? To be frank, it's going to it's going to disappear someday anyways. So how and why are we going, why do we hold on to this industry that is not going to sustain us in the future? We're going to have to look at different options. We're going to have to look at different means of bringing revenue into the state, and we're going to have to look at different ways to pivot our economy from something that's from consumption-based to something that's restorative-based and actually regenerates income here in the state in a way that just doesn't do any good for human health or the environment.
Would you support banning fracking?
I definitely do support a ban on fracking. It's an unsustainable industry that is deleterious to our health. It's a consumptive practice that generates billions of gallons of waste. Much of it is radioactive. And it's all going on at a gangbusters pace here in Pennsylvania. So we do need a ban on fracking.
When you say much of it radioactive, what do you mean by that?
Well, the process of fracking, when they get the returns out of the subsurface, there's a lot of naturally occurring elements in there that are radioactive. So you get radioactive waste through the fracking process. It depends on the formation that you're working in, but a lot of times that return, the fluids that return out, they have to be disposed of as hazardous waste. They need to be treated. Some of this wasn't even apparent or discovered, so it's already being distributed all over the Commonwealth through practices like injection wells or road spreading.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're aware that there, well, okay, let me not say that. I'm sure you're aware. Are you aware that there has really been no research to show that it causes that radioactivity that you're talking about, as you said, naturally occurring, has caused any negative health effects?
Yeah, lack of research doesn't really excuse it, though. That requires there to be cancer clusters, right? Somebody's gonna scream on the top of their lungs when there becomes an Aaron Brockovich situation. And then we'll research it and we'll find out that this probably wasn't the best idea.
Well, I don't know whether sane research doesn't matter. I mean, a lot of people, you need that kind of research to know what's going on, but that as it may be. What about those jobs, those people who are working here in Pennsylvania in the natural gas industry, and for that matter, even in the coal industry? There aren't a lot of coal jobs compared to what there used to be in Pennsylvania. But what about those jobs? How do they get replaced? How do those people make the money that they're making now?
Yeah, and this is a constant struggle, right? We saw it in coal here in Pennsylvania, where the coal industry supported whole communities, and once it was done and over with, those communities are basically dying. The companies got what they want, they left, and the town is headed down towards a ghost town road. So how do we address that? Because it's going to happen with the oil industry. There's only so much of it. There's going to be a point in time where that industry picks up and leaves because there's nothing left for them, and then they're going to leave our communities by themselves. So I would encourage people to really look at things like the Green New Deal that intends to revitalize our economy through sustainable energy practices, through building new infrastructure for roads, bridges, wind, solar, items like methane capture. There's plenty of technical jobs that are involved in there, trade jobs that are involved in there, and science that's involved in it too. If we put our weight behind a program that is really designed to bring our economy and our energy infrastructure into the future, those jobs will come and we can keep them.
Let's get back to the job of treasurer. Why do you think you'd be a better candidate than your opponents?
Well, I'm not going to blow my horn here and say that I'll be better than all of them. For instance, I think that it doesn't take a unique individual to execute what's required out of this job. Be transparent. Make sure you get the task done, and you'll do a good job. So why would I be better? I think that providing a different viewpoint on what the position does, sharing different ideas, how we can look at the state's revenues and expenditures, because I will have touched the books and seen it all come and go. That's probably what's going to make me a better candidate here, is that I'll be able to speak, and I'm interested in speaking on that role in a different way.
Mm. One thing I have to say, though, Mr. Roeckel, is that you have to, as a candidate, you have to kind of blow your own horn, don't you?
Yeah, I'm a chronic, what do you want to say? I don't pat myself on the back too much. So when you get to know me, I'm actually fairly shy, and I don't like a lot of attention, but that's what folks need to do in this. So I see your point.
What changes, if any, could be made to help Pennsylvania invest better?
In better investment. Okay, so one thing I would say is start getting away from the big banks and go to banks here in Pennsylvania, banks that are a little bit different, like credit unions. So you have worker-owned institutions. That's better investment that directly affects those people here in the state.
So, basically, are you saying that are you satisfied with how the state's monies are being invested right now? The returns that we're getting.
The returns that we're getting right now, they're sufficient for the job that we're doing. Do we actually need to, increase revenue in order to complete the tasks on hand? Well, I'm not so sure that's. Would be my responsibility to share with folks, or that's really up to the legislator, the General Assembly, to figure out that process.
Should the treasurer have any kind of influence on the governor or the legislature and how money is spent?
Yeah, we can, and we should. We can provide the information to them. When they create a budget and it gets spent, you're the guy or the girl that's going to understand how it actually happened. So there's a lot of reporting requirements that you got to come out with, and you must be able to present it in a clear and understandable fashion so that those individuals can do their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Tim Roeckel, I always allow time for candidates to leave a message with voters. What would your message be with the voters of Pennsylvania?
Well, I'm not so sure I want to speak directly to the voters. They know that they're going to get out and they're going to vote. I'd like to speak to the non-voters out there in Pennsylvania. It's these individuals that feel that the present situation, our present government, has left them and isn't working and isn't functioning properly. But I want to encourage those non-voters to get up and get involved, because they are right now, even as a non-voter, the largest voter block in the nation is non-voters, people that don't vote. So if they would realize that they actually have a lot of weight in this and get up and get involved, get registered to vote, we could actually see things work in a better manner that just isn't controlled by a two-party dipole.
Tim Roeckel is the Green Party candidate for Pennsylvania State Treasurer. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Yes, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about schools reopening, talking to some educators about some of the experiences they've had with schools that have opened in person or those that have been taught online. We have schools every day, it seems, that are changing their decisions as to what they originally decided to do because of the pandemic, but we'll be talking about that on tomorrow's program as well. Later in the week, next week, we really get into more interviews, more conversations with political candidates, so be sure to tune in. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.